Opinions stated by various contributors to the Money and Business Show and related programs are not to be considered as endorsed by Radio Shalom, its employees. Visitors to this program are urged to use their own discernment to draw their own conclusions. Please read your prospectus and consult with your own investment advisor.
Live from the studios of Radio Shalom, 1650 AM in Montreal, Canada, the city of joie de vivre, the world capital of culinary variety, and the home of the Montreal Canadiens, this is the Money and Business Show with your host, Samuel Izerzer. Every week, Samuel and his guests discuss money, investments, financial services, and the world economy. Over the next hour, you can have your questions about business and personal finances answered. So call 514-738-4100, extension 200, to speak with Samuel and his guests. And now, here is the host of the Money and Business Show, Samuel Izerzer.
Money, money, and business. Ponzi schemes have proliferated and have caused widespread damage to capital markets in wiping out investors' wealth. Just south of the border in the U.S., in 2008, we saw Bernie Madoff, who committed the largest financial fraud in history, bilking investors for over $60 billion and sentenced to life in prison. And these schemes are also taking place in Canada, where regulatory enforcements have been criticized as weak and lacks resources to sufficiently deal with it. We saw the episode with Vincent Lacroix right here in Montreal, Canada, who defrauded investors for over $40 million. The common theme of investors is trust and vulnerabilities pervasive in these sophisticated schemes. As well as this past month, the Department of Justice in the U.S. slapped a record fine on J.P. Morgan Chase for packaging and selling the mortgage-backed financial products that helped cause the financial meltdown. But Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, wants the administration to know that fines are not enough. On Wednesday, she called on Wall Street regulators to hold those responsible for the 2008 crisis accountable. In a letter to the Federal Reserve, the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC, Elizabeth Warren wants to see a crackdown on financial industry players who looted, stole, or even abused the federal emergency funds doled out to the banks during the financial crisis, and implied that the three banking regulators should also punish individuals and help cause the financial meltdown. Earlier this year, the U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder seemed to concede that some banks are just too big to jail. I don't understand that. But Senator Warren doesn't buy that. There have been some landmark settlements in recent weeks for which agencies and others deserve substantial credit. Warren said in a letter, "In my opinion, however, a great deal of work remains to be done to hold institutions and individuals accountable for breaking the rules and to protect consumers and taxpayers from future violations." My name is Samuel Izerzer, your host to the Money and Business Show on Radio Shalom, CJRS 1650 AM. Thank you for tuning in live with our studio's headquarters in Montreal, the financial capital and the home of the greatest hockey team, the Montreal Canadiens. We have another great show for you today. As always, you can call if you have any questions, comments, or even criticism on today's topic. Please call us directly, 514-738-4100, extension 200, or email me at moneyandbusinessshow@gmail.com if you have any inquiries. You can also visit our website at www.radio-shalom.ca. All our shows are archived there. Today, live, we have from Los Angeles, we have Kathy Bezion Phelps. She's a partner at Diamond McCarthy. But also, before introducing, I'm going to be introducing Adam Eidelman, attorney, legal, obviously a lawyer, legal, and also
and co-host. Thank
and
you.
And co-host. Exactly.
It's been so long; you almost forgot about me.
It's been a few weeks, actually. And also, you know what? I'm just going to plug in your email, ae@legallogic.com.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah.
And also, we want to congratulate, obviously, Mr. Kader for the mayor
of
Montreal.
Of course, the last time
But he's in hot water now, right?
Apparently, he's in hot water. You should maybe think about staying away from Twitter and criticizing the Montreal Canadiens.
What happened there?
There's only one thing that can get you in such hot water after 1 week in office. Once you start attacking David Desharnais and this basically insinuating you should go back to Hamilton. I think he's got a bit of a problem on his hands.
But he's a real Montreal fan. And, you know, we had him here a couple of weeks
ago. He's a passionate guy.
Yeah. And you know, I had a feeling he was going to win. That's why I had him on here at the on the Money Business Show. But he
was a great... Did you vote for him?
No, I didn't vote for... I'll tell you what. Well, you know what? Because I'm not in the area. That's why.
Oh, okay.
That's why.
I wasn't expecting that answer.
No, I live in Côte Saint-Luc, so...
Okay.
I didn't really
Fair
vote.
Enough.
But anyways, I'm going to introduce our next
Big
guest.
Big mazel tov to Denny Kader.
Yes, of course. And you know what? He's going to come back on again.
I hope so.
Right after his, being mayor, you know, he's got a lot of work to do. But... Live from California is Kathy Phelps, partner at Diamond McCarthy. Kathy Phelps has over 21 years of experience as a lawyer in bankruptcy, law, and fraud litigation. Has spoken and written widely on broad range of fraud and bankruptcy-related matters, and has co-written the Ponzi Book, a legal resource for unraveling Ponzi schemes. And now she has a new book that all investors and professionals should read. It makes it a Bible, because I'm going to make it a Bible.
Ponzi Proof. I definitely want to read this.
Oh yeah, you're going to have to. It's called Ponzi Proof Your Investments Account. That's what it is. Ponzi Proof Your Investment and Investor's Guide to Avoiding Ponzi Schemes and Other Fraudulent Scams. You got to read that. I'm not kidding.
I definitely will take a look at it.
She thought after keynote speaker on all issues relating to fraud, due to diligence, compliance, and Ponzi schemes throughout the United States. Kathy speaks to hundreds of professionals, lawyers, accountants, bankers, financial advisors, investors, and others about mandatory due diligence and red flag warnings that simply cannot be ignored. Kathy also now has written a practical guide for investors and others, containing specific tools and due diligence questions to ask, and insights into marketing and sales tactics employed by the Ponzi perpetrator or other fraudsters. How are you? How you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Yes, I see that you're busy writing a book. The last time you wrote a great book, and now your new book, Ponzi Proof Your Investment as Investor's Guide, Avoiding Ponzi Schemes and Other Fraudulent Scams. How long did it? You wrote this, what, like in a month or two? Or it took you like 10 years to write it, because it seems it's a huge book. I see that.
Well, the first book, the legal resource book, took a couple of years. And, you know, having read every single legal decision with the word Ponzi scheme in it, and I also write a blog, the Ponzi Scheme blog, so I read every
Your blog. This is Adam Eidelman. I read your blog, by the way. Very good.
Oh, thank you. And so I had all of this information in my head, and I thought, you know, these stories are the same story again and again and again, and I really would like to display this in a way for investors to help them avoid investing in these things in the first place, so that we don't have so many stories to tell going forward. So I wrote this book in just real simple English, with just little snippets and stories of what's gone wrong for other people, providing them specific due diligence tips and techniques and questions to ask, so that hopefully they won't invest in one of these schemes.
So how big is this book? I mean, we're looking at a few hundred pages here.
Because
your other book was like 1,000 pages. Like, I mean, it was huge.
Well, the legal resource is about 800 pages. No, this one is about 200 pages,
okay.
and it's a smaller book. It's a 6x9 book. It's a handbook. So no, it's quite digestible, easily understandable, and that was the intent.
So Kathy, there's so many things going on these days, and have we seen any slowdown in Ponzi schemes activity since Madoff and other larger Ponzi schemes, that happened in 2008, 2009? I mean, has anything progressed here?
Oh, I wish I could say yes.
Oh, my God.
the big cases in 2008, 2009, you know, the Allen Stanford, Thomas Petters, Rothstein. If you tally up the losses from all of those, they were about $50 billion. Well, since I track these stories, I kind of keep track of the numbers and the investors and whatnot. And just for 2013 alone, mm-hmm. and just from stories reported on Google, I count it over $22 billion just from this year.
$22 billion in 2013.
Is that globally? Sorry to chime in. Is that globally or just in the United States, Kathy?
That's globally. And there have been some very sizable ones abroad. We've seen some big ones in India, a big one in Japan. And so, that is globally. And it's a global problem. It really is.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we did our last show, I was talking to even my co-host, but, you know, Adam is our new co-host. And I just want to tell you, Adam, I had a feeling this was going to happen, that nothing would change in the United States.
Well, I mean, it's a big problem, though. I mean, I'll let Kathy talk about it, but it's not something that could be, you know, fixed in 2 or 3 years. I mean,
can it be fixed? Can it be fixed, Kathy?
Well, you know, there's two ways to fix it. You can fix it on the front end, or you can fix it on the back end. And on the front end, it's investors making the decision to not invest in these schemes and doing their due diligence. On the back end, it's can we recoup their money? And can we implement laws that will prevent these perpetrators from being able to engage in these schemes? And that's harder. But I got to tell you, given the level of activity and the fact that investors continue to pour their money into these things, the front end is hard as well. There's so much psychology. There's so much human characteristics built into these things that they're very difficult to stop. And the laws can only go so far.
Kathy, quick question for you. In terms of public awareness, I mean, I think that that's one of the main manners or ways to combat this type of issue. How do you feel, being an expert in the field, how do you feel about the public awareness or lack thereof? And I'm referring specifically to the United States. Do you feel like there's been a lot of headway since 2008, 2009?
Well, people now know the word Ponzi scheme, that's for sure. So in that respect, yes, but I have to say part of the reason that I wrote this book, Ponzi Proof Your Investments, is because I don't think that people are yet aware enough. And the problem is they hear about a great investment program from their friend or from their relative, and they just trust, and they just invest, and mm-hmm. they put their money into it, mm-hmm. and they're not doing their due diligence. So while people are aware that there is fraud, and they are aware that their friends and their family are losing money, when it comes to them, and they're trusting, and they're making that individual decision, they're not exercising prudence and due diligence. And so in that respect, it's not slowing down, and I'd like to even raise awareness further, which is why I wrote this book.
You know what? We're going to go to a station break, Kathy, okay? Just stay on the line. We do have Kathy Phelps, partner at Diamond McCarthy, live from Los Angeles in the United States. She wrote a book called Ponzi Proof Your Investments, An Investor's Guide to Avoiding Ponzi Schemes and Other Fraudulent Scams. My name is Samuel Ezerza for the Money Vision on Radio Shalom, CJRS 1650 AM in Montreal. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
Lots of regulation. It's been the wrong sort of regulation, hasn't it? And so we've had another disaster. And none of this is actually going to save us from another disaster down the line. It's bound to happen because we haven't addressed the real problems. And that is your fractional reserve banking system. We must have a commodity bank on the one hand, an investment bank on the other hand. So, Commissioner, you talk about banks' ability to withstand shocks. Well, by this definition, by your definition, a shock is people turning up wanting their money back. You know, that's not a shock. That's a sort of should be a day-to-day occurrence and should be dealt with accordingly. And we're talking about bankers' bonuses, an absolutely wonderful way of taking everybody's eye off the ball. What we've actually had here is criminal activity by bankers, and not a single banker has been sent to prison.
We're back, live in studio with Samuel Ezerzer in the business headquarters of Radio Shalom, 1650 AM in Montreal, with the Money and Business Show. You have questions about your personal finances? You need advice in making sound financial decisions? Samuel and his guests are ready to take your call at 514-738-4100, extension 200. And now, back to the Money and Business Show.
We're back on the Money and Business Show. My name is Sammy Ezerzer. I'm with my co-host, Adam Eidelman, attorney at law. Okay, and also we do have Kathy Phelps, partner at Diamond McCarthy, live from Los Angeles. She wrote a book called Ponzi Proof Your Investments and Investor's Guide to Avoiding Ponzi Schemes and Other Fraudulent Scams. How are you? How you doing, Kathy? Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you.
You know what? Before I'm going to ask you this question, we're going to be going for a clip. It's going to be a few minutes long, but there's a point to this, okay? Just hold on. Go ahead. Let's hear the clip.
Chairman Ranaki, I'm looking at the report that you handed out this morning, and I was wondering if you could take your copy and turn to page 26.
Okay.
There's a table on page 26 which consists of your balance sheet, and one of the entries on the balance sheet is under assets, central bank liquidity swaps, which shows an increase from the end of 2007 from $24 billion to $553 billion in change. at the end of 2008. What's that?
Those are swaps that were done with foreign central banks. Many, many foreign banks are short dollars. And so they come into our markets looking for dollars and drive up interest rates and create volatility in our markets. What we have done is, with a number of major central banks, like the European Central Bank, for example, we swap our currency, dollars, for their currency, euros. They take the dollars, lend it out to the banks in their jurisdiction. That helps bring down interest rates in the global market for dollars. And meanwhile, we're not lending to those banks, we're lending to the central bank. The central bank is responsible for repaying us.
So who got the money?
To financial institutions in Europe and other countries.
Which ones?
I don't know.
$500 billion, and you don't know who got the money?
The loan went to the loans go to the central banks, and they then put them out to their institutions to try to bring down short-term interest rates in dollar markets around the world.
Well, let's start with which central banks got the money.
There are 14 of them, which are listed in our. I'm sure they're listed in here somewhere.
All right. So, who actually made that decision to hand out $1 trillion that way, $500 billion? Who made that decision?
The Federal Open Market Committee.
Okay. And was it done at one time or in a series of meetings?
A series of meetings.
And under what legal authority?
We have a long-standing legal authority to do swaps with other central banks.
Do you have to know
anything? It's not an emergency authority of any kind.
Anything specific about it?
Do you know the... My counsel says Section 14 of the Federal Reserve Act.
All right. We actually looked at one of the arrangements, and one of the arrangements is $9 billion for New Zealand. That works out to $3,000 for every single person who lives in New Zealand. Seriously, wouldn't it have been better to extend that kind of credit to Americans rather than New Zealanders?
It's not costing Americans anything. We're getting interest back, and it comes back. It's not at the cost of any American credit. We are extending credit to Americans.
Well, wouldn't it necessarily affect the credit markets if you extend $500 billion in credit to anybody?
We are lending to all U.S. Financial institutions in exactly the same way.
Well, look at the next page. The very next page has the U.S. dollar nominal exchange rate, which shows a 20% increase in the U.S. dollar nominal exchange rate at exactly the same time that you were handing out $500 billion. Do you think that's a coincidence?
Yes.
All right. Well, the Constitution says no money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law.
This money is not drawn from the Treasury.
Let's talk about that. Do you think it's consistent with the spirit of that provision in the Constitution for a group like the FOMC to hand out $500 billion to foreigners without any action by this Congress?
Congress approved it in the Federal Reserve Act.
When was that?
Quite a long time ago. I don't know the exact date.
The original act is 1914, I believe.
Kathy, that was Representative Alan Grayson grilling Ben Bernanke about the $1 trillion. Can the FOMC or the Federal Reserve go from $25 billion to $500 billion without the approval of Congress? And, you know, I'm going to throw this at you, okay? And this is a question mark. Can this represent like a huge, giant Ponzi scheme by the feds?
Well, as to the
you're laughing.
As to the first part of your question, the increase in the Federal Reserve is a question that Congress itself is grappling with, so I'm not even going to begin to opine on that one.
Yeah.
A giant Ponzi scheme. Well, it sounds dramatic and compelling to call it that, and it's really easy to make like a broad brush statement that something like that's a Ponzi scheme when that much money seems to go missing. And it is indeed distressing that the answers about where that money went and how it's coming back are a little less than clear. It almost sounds, though, as though it's the U.S. that's the investor in a Ponzi scheme, and the U.S. is just going to get paid money back with interest at some point. But there are definitely hallmark signs of a Ponzi scheme and what makes it a classic Ponzi scheme. And no, I don't think that this falls into that category. And let me just tell you generally what that is. I mean, it's some sort of an investment program, but there's really no legitimate business operations that are generating any type of legitimate profits and therefore guaranteed returns. And earlier investors put money in and they're promised returns, and then those investors are paid their returns by new money coming in from new investors. And it creates the illusion of a legitimate profit-making business when there really isn't one, and that induces further investments. So the answer is no, I don't think this falls into the category of a Ponzi scheme, and it actually sounds like it's not the feds that are running the Ponzi scheme anyway.
How could Ben Bernanke say, I don't know where the money went? This is what I don't understand. Where's the trail?
From his explanation, yeah. It's like we did one loan to the central bank, and from there it went out to these countries, and then they in their discretion decided where it would go. But it is a little distressing to listen to it. I agree.
I would say it's shocking. In fact, it's bordering on ludicrous. But Kathy, just for our listeners out there, could you kind of delineate or outline what are the common types of schemes or Ponzi schemes that we're seeing these days in 2013? What are some of the more popular ones?
Well, you name it, and it's out there. And these things, as I mentioned earlier, are really across the globe. And what I see as I look at the stories reported on them is they really seem to take on the characteristics of the culture in which they're thriving.
Okay.
And there's really not necessarily a classic business model, because it could be anything. What we hear a lot about, certainly, are securities and bond trading and that type of a thing, foreign exchange transactions. There's buy an interest in a gold mine, oil and gas operations. You can purchase an ATM machine that's going to keep spitting out money.
Sorry, there's a lot
of real estate Ponzi scams.
Could we hear some examples?
I think she just gave some examples.
I love the ATM one.
No, but she gave some concrete. Yeah, that was very
good.
Let me give you my two favorites from this past
year.
Yes,
go ahead.
One of them, and this was in India, and it was a promise of 2% monthly returns and a doubling of your money every 3 to 4 years if you purchased one goat. And that
goat
was one goat. And that goat was to be reared by the Ponzi scheme perpetrator, and that goat would give birth to 4 kids every year, and those new goats would be sold to other investors, giving a 4-fold appreciation just in the first year.
I was actually thinking of joining that one.
Let me ask you a question. What would your number one due diligence question be if you were asked to invest in this scheme?
Goat?
Is the goat healthy? What's the lineage of the goat?
Question. Well, here's my question. Is it a boy goat or a girl goat?
Maybe
in China that might be a difference, but in India it makes a big difference?
Well, because if you're wanting your goat to give...
Well, if he can't reproduce...
That's right. You're right.
That's interesting.
So they all got boy goats? Is that it? They all got male goats?
Well, I don't know that anybody got goats and anybody goats had kids because millions of dollars were lost. There was another one just last week I saw in the news, which was not dissimilar, the Pigeon King. If you buy a pair of pigeons for $500 and you enter into a 5 or a 10 year contract, you're going to get paid returns as those pigeons have their little pigeonettes, their pigeonets.
I'm amazed that people actually in 2013, with all the dissemination of information, actually fall into this trap.
Pigeons.
It's amazing.
Millions
pigeons.
Of dollars.
It's
okay.
Amazing.
Millions of dollars.
When will the cows be sold here? The cows, the elephants, and tigers?
You're joking, but there was a $4 billion Ponzi scheme in Japan this past year over beef, the Wagyu beef, or I'm not sure you pronounce it.
Right.
Yeah, and again, same thing. It's unbelievable the size of the schemes. And of course, there was the Zeke Rewards scheme, just millions of investors. A couple million investors. It's crazy. I mean, the things that people will pour their money into. There's no end to the
story. What about the portfolios out there? The Madoff of the world type of schemes. Is it still going on?
Absolutely. They go on all the time. There was another one that broke last year where the investors didn't know what the investment strategy was that the broker was using. Well, it turned out after the thing went bust and he had lost all of their money that he was basing his investment strategy on the lunar cycle and the gravitational pull of
lunar,
the moon.
Lunar cycle?
The Farmer's Almanac.
Wow.
Because people feel more depressed when there's a full moon and then they sell their stock. I mean, it was some crazy strategy like that.
Right.
That if had anybody asked this guy, what are you basing your investment strategy on, this is what they would have heard. And perhaps they wouldn't have invested their
money. And what was the total there, like $500 million, $100 million?
Wow. No, on that one, it was, I don't recall the number. It was I think it was around $10 million, but I don't recall. Yeah, but some of these other ones are millions or billions.
So what other ones you have? I'm sure you got plenty.
Oh, there was another one, the potato bond scheme. If you buy potatoes when they're really cheap and you freeze them, then you can sell them when the price goes up, and you are guaranteed a 20% return. And it was called the Flexi Potato Purchase Scheme.
I'm sorry I'm laughing. It's not funny, but it's...
Well, all those... And this happened in the United States?
No, that one was in India as well, actually.
It's a global phenomenon. It's amazing.
I didn't know that.
People automatically assume...
I buy potatoes to eat, but not to 20% return.
You know, some people automatically assume it's...
These are potato heads, Adam. These are potato heads. Right, Kathy?
I mean, the red flag there is, how can you, not knowing how the price of potatoes is going to fluctuate, if it even fluctuates that much, how can you guarantee someone a 20% return? You know, I mean, that's just a red flag off the bat.
Absolutely.
When you see something like that.
So you know what, Kathy, stay on the line. We're going to go to a station break. We have Kathy Felt, partner at Diamond McCarthy, live from Los Angeles in the United States. She wrote a book called Ponzi Proof Your Investments, An Investor's Guide to Avoiding Ponzi Schemes and Other Fraudulent Scams. My name is Samuel Ezerzer for the Money Mission on Radio Shalom, CJRS 1650 AM Montreal. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
We're back, live in studio with Samuel Ezerzer in the business headquarters of Radio Shalom, 1650 AM in Montreal, with the Money and Business Show. You have questions about your personal finances? You need advice in making sound financial decisions? Samuel and his guests are ready to take your call at 514-738-4100, extension 200. And now, back to the Money and Business Show.
After more than 3 years of waiting, victims of the infamous Alan Stanford billion-dollar Ponzi scheme will soon be compensated. The receiver for Jail Texas financier Alan Stanford's assets has sought approval from a United States federal judge for interim payment to swindled investors. In a filing in a federal district court, Ralph Janvey, the court-appointed receiver, asks Judge David Godbey for his permission to pay more than 17,000 investors an initial distribution of U.S. $55 million. If approved, Janvey says investors swindled by Stanford may receive an interim distribution payment worth a penny on the dollar of their losses. The sum represents about 1% of the U.S. $5.1 billion investors lost in bogus certificates of deposits at Antigua-based Stanford International Bank Limited. Stanford, who is 62 years old, was convicted in March last year of swindling more than U.S. $2 billion from depositors at his bank to finance a lavish personal lifestyle of private jets, yachts, and mansions. He's serving 110 years in the U.S. federal prison in Florida as he appeals his conviction and sentence.
We're back with Kathy Felt, partner at Diamond McCarthy, live from Los Angeles. She wrote a book called Ponzi Proof Your Investments, An Investor's Guide to Avoiding Ponzi Schemes and Other Fraudulent Scams. By the way, before I ask you the question of the Stanford Ponzi scheme, I just can't get over the potatoes. Freeze potatoes and 20% return? Who would fall for that?
A lot of people. You would not believe if their cousin says, "I know this guy and he's a great businessman and this is a great deal and you're not making any money with your money sitting in the bank. Let's invest it in the potato scheme."
Unbelievable.
They'll say, "Oh, okay."
Unbelievable.
It is.
So we have Alan Stanford, the Texas financier convicted, many years ago of leading an investment fraud scheme, was ordered to give back, $6.7 billion. 1 cent on the dollar. That's
a good return on your investment.
I mean, 1 cent on the dollar. I mean, you heard the clip, Kathy. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, well, I've been following that case, and that's not the end of the story in that case, and I remain hopeful that those investors will actually get a lot more money. I think that's an initial distribution. That case has been very expensive and has been fought hard in Antigua as well, which is where most of the operations were. But it is, it's depressing, and again, it goes back to my don't invest in these things in the first place, because it's pretty unlikely you're ever going to get all your money back on the back end. And the Stanford Financial case is troubling because, you know, one of my mantras is, if it's a business model that you don't understand, don't invest. Well, Stanford was very understandable. People were buying certificates of deposit. This is something that we all feel generally relatively comfortable with. Now, the returns that were being offered on them were definitely a little bit higher than the market was bearing, which is another red flag. If things are not in line with the market, that should cause some concern. But people invest in these schemes, you know, for different reasons. And it's a combination, the reason that they proliferate is a combination of the investor's psychology and the perpetrator's psychology. You know, Charles Ponzi himself, he wrote an autobiography, and he had a couple of choice quotes in it. And one of them was, you know, the world was my market, the whole of mankind was my clientele, because he was dealing in money. And he said, we're all gamblers and we all crave easy money and plenty of it. If we didn't, no get-rich scheme could ever be successful. And that's very true.
You know what, Kathy? The reason why I want to put that clip on, I just want the listeners of Radio Shalom and even global, people who are actually listening out there, to understand when they put money and say, you know what, I'll trust this person, and they don't do the due diligence. Look, 1 cent on the dollar, Adam. 1 cent on the dollar.
It's crazy. Well, as Kathy alluded to very eloquently, that's just the beginning. And these kind of cases drag on for years.
I know. I just want people to understand, when they put their money and their faith in someone, instead of like asking around and do their due diligence and so on, this is what can happen.
Right.
Kathy, as an attorney, I'm very curious about what legislative measures have been undertaken in your state. We'll refer to California recently to kind of combat these kinds of situations. Has there been any legislative response?
On the state level, nothing occurs to me. There are certainly all kinds of efforts and things going on at the national level. There are a few states that have enacted state statutes specifically to protect charities, charitable organizations,
right,
interestingly enough, because oftentimes a Ponzi scheme perpetrator is going to throw money around, you know, splash it around like, look how rich I am, mm-hmm, let me donate a million here, mm-hmm, a million there, and then mm-hmm, the charities get sued to give that money back.
Right.
Once it ends up in a bankruptcy or a receivership. And so the states have become protective of the charities and have enacted some statute that have said, you know, no, let's limit the amount of time they can look back. Let's limit the dollar amount. And so there's been some protection there. There's also some penalties that people are seeking to impose on financial institutions and others to wake people up to become more aware and detect fraud and try to stop fraud at the front end.
Excellent. My next question would be for you. Can you kind of touch upon the psychology of the investor and the deceit of the perpetrator? I know you touched upon it a little bit, but can you go into a little bit more of, you know, the modus operandi of this type of situation?
Sure, sure. Well, investors, you know, we've talked about, they get in trouble because they're investing based on trust. Maybe they're lazy and they don't want to do their due diligence. Maybe they're just ignorant, whatever the reason is. Investors also are very averse to loss, and most of these Ponzi schemes will promise it's risk-free, your principal is guaranteed, you're not going to lose it, and that just gives people an immediate sense of comfort and enables mm-hmm. them to invest their money. People also really like to mimic the behavior of their friends, and if their friends are invested in something and it looks like they're making money, they have this fear of, oh my goodness, I'm missing out. Now, more cynically stated, you know, Harry Markopoulos wrote a book that he's the whistleblower in the Madoff case that no one would listen. And he had one quote in this book that I just love. And it said, the fact that seemingly sophisticated investors would give Madoff hundreds of millions of dollars after he refused to allow them to conduct ordinary due diligence was a tribute to either greed or stupidity. So I don't really like to call investors greedy or stupid, because I think that they unwittingly get caught up into these things. But once you have an awareness that this could happen, doing a minimum amount of due diligence is really the
Kathy,
best of action.
How many people came up to me in the past maybe couple of years and said, you know what, I got an offer 3 or 4 or 5% a month guaranteed. Okay, so I asked them, so where are you investing it? Well, I don't really know, but can you come with me and you know, right. maybe. So I did come to one of the meetings one time.
Uh-huh. Why didn't you tell us about that?
Yeah. Story? No, I wanted to share the story with you. I'm not going to mention names or whatever, but I'm going to share the story with you. And she said, well, it's an exclusive investment firm from Switzerland. Kathy, from Switzerland. Exclusive. I think we heard that before, right? Exclusive, Madoff, you know? So I told the guy after, I said, if you do this, you're an idiot, you're a bonehead, don't do this. Because, oh, no, but my friend did it, and what? Yeah. So what happened? Well, I don't know.
Those are all the classic.
It's the classic case where it's exclusive. Don't worry about it. It's in Switzerland or Cayman Islands, British. Hey, you know.
Or in Montreal.
But it's usually the Cayman Islands where they have the bank account or the investments or something like that. I just want the listeners to know, when you hear it's an exclusive investment firm or an exclusive club, stay away.
Or when you're asked to keep secrets, this is only for you to know. Don't talk to anyone else about this. Yeah, those are all the classic things. Or whatever the promise is something that is just too good to be true. Mm-hmm. It genuinely is. Just it doesn't make any sense. And what happens is that the perpetrators know this about people.
Yes.
They know people's personality traits. And if you kind of profile the Ponzi scheme perpetrator, they tend to be very intelligent and have a really good financial background. They're overconfident and they're motivated by greed, which of course is what makes them run these things. And they're egotistical, the self-delusional, but most importantly, they're really skilled at deceiving other people. There's a quote from Groucho Marx that I love. He says, "The secret of life is honesty and fair dealing. If you can fake that, you've got it made."
But they work on the greed. They know who they're going to go after. They know that they have money. They know that they can lose, you know, half a million or a quarter million. And obviously, it's going to hurt them, but not kill them. But it's just unbelievable. When I was at that meeting, Kathy, that the fact that even he brought me there and listening to this nonsense, and I'm listening for half an hour, and she's telling me all about, you know, the investment and all that. I'm looking and I'm saying, what's going on here? It's still going on. So either people are still falling, obviously they're falling for this trap, but at the same time, regulators, I still feel that they still have to do a lot more. There's a lot more work to do, Kathy. There's a lot more work. And when you're investing in Switzerland, how can you go, you know, take a plane to Switzerland? Where did I invest the money? Or the Cayman Islands or Bahamas, wherever it is, you know?
Well, that's why a lot of investment gurus, I think, such as Warren Buffett, would state, don't invest in things you don't know. And if you're not familiar
with the
industry,
exactly.
What do you think about that, Kathy?
Well, and I think that's very true. You know, I've heard and I believe it to be true that if you can't understand the business model within about 5 minutes, then just walk away from it because nothing is that complicated.
Yeah, and stop trusting.
And that was part of Bernie Madoff's strategy. He had his split strike conversion strategy, and people like, ooh, that sounds really good. No one had any idea what it meant, but it sounded good.
Kathy, just stay on the line, okay? We have Kathy Phelps, partner at Diamond McCarthy, live from Los Angeles. She wrote a book called Ponzi Proof Your Investment, An Investor's Guide to Avoiding Ponzi Schemes and Other Fraudulent Scams. I'm also with Adam Eidelman, legal attorney at law, okay? Did I say it right this time?
Attorney at law, yes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Samuel Ezerza for the Money Investor Show, Radio Shalom. I wanted you to smile, that's all. On CJRS 1650 AM Montreal. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
I was raised in a milieu where I was taught that communism leads to dictatorship and that capitalism leads to democracy. But it's not that simple.
The essence of a politician, of the political animal, is the pursuit of power.
You can say what you want about this country, and I love this place. I love the freedoms we used to have. I love it. I love that.
So what do they get when they are elected to office? They get power, not money, power.
Free market capitalism definitely democratizes a country and a culture. But corporate crony capitalism of the kind we're seeing with this White House is as antithetical to democracy in America as it is in
Nigeria. Power of concentrated wealth shall not be abused.
Americans have to understand the difference between free market capitalism, which benefits our country, and this kind of corporate crony capitalism where we have large corporations running our government, and there's a name for that, and the name is fascism.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're back, live in studio with Samuel Azurzer in the business headquarters of Radio Shalom, 1650 AM in Montreal, with the Money and Business Show. You have questions about your personal finances? You need advice in making sound financial decisions? Samuel and his guests are ready to take your call at 514-738-4100, extension 200. And now, back to the Money and Business Show.
We're back live in California, Los Angeles. It's Kathy Felt, partner at Diamond McCarthy. We're going to be talking about the Ponzi-proof your investments and all the scams that are going on. But Adam, you remember maybe a few weeks ago we had Everett Stern, chief whistleblower of HSBC.
Who could forget what Everett was saying?
I'm telling you, it was an exclusive interview here.
Explosive interview.
And you know how much I love the bankers, right?
It's one of your pet peeves.
Yes, exactly. That's why I always talk about them, just to make sure that our listeners understand what's going on out there. But before I ask you a question, we're going to be listening to a clip when I spoke with Everett Stern. And Kathy, I want you to comment right after, okay? Go ahead.
Okay.
I think a couple of weeks ago, you were in Washington, right? If I'm not correctly.
Right.
And how come you were in Washington?
I was meeting with the chairwoman of the House Finance Committee.
And what happened?
We had about a 2.5 hour meeting, and where I discussed. I was contacted by the House Finance Committee. I did not reach out to them.
Okay. Right.
They're looking to pursue a new investigation at HSBC, and I informed them of everything that's going on and still going on, and they went to Eric Holder the following week.
And this is what we're going to do. We're going to be listening to a clip of Eric Holder, and this is what surprises me, and I'm sure a lot of listeners are going to be surprised when he says, these banks are just too big to prosecute in jail. Go ahead.
Senator Brown and I requested details on who these so-called experts are. So far, we've not received any information. Maybe you're going to, but why have we not yet been provided the names of the experts that DOJ consults with, as we requested on January 29th? Because we need to find out why we aren't having these high-profile cases. And then I got one follow-up. So maybe you can answer that quickly.
Well, we'll endeavor to answer your letter, Senator. We did not, as I understand it, retain experts outside of the government in making determinations with regard to HSBC. Now, if we could just put that aside for a minute, though, the concern that you have raised is one that I frankly share. And I'm not talking about HSBC now, because that may not be appropriate. But I am concerned that the size of some of these institutions becomes so large that it does become difficult for us to prosecute them when we are hit with indications that if you do prosecute, if you do bring a criminal charge, it will have a negative impact on the national economy, perhaps even the world economy. And I think that is a function of the fact that some of these institutions have become too large. Now, again, I'm not talking about HSBC. This is just a more general comment.
I don't know why, Kathy. The more I hear Eric Holder, the more I just get angry and angrier and angrier. I just don't know what to do. I mean, how could a bank be too big to jail?
You know, I don't buy it either. In the context of a Ponzi scheme or a fraud case, I mean, you can't run that kind of a case without a bank, but you can't run a bank without bankers. And bankers daily are making decisions, and those are individuals. And so by indicting an entire institution, that's one thing, but it's the individuals and that are responsible for the conduct. Now, I do think that there are some gray areas here, and at least in the U.S., our criminal justice system is really based on intent and culpability and a state of mind. And there's often a fine line between what was negligent and stupid conduct and what was criminal conduct. And so I think that a lot of the difficulty in whether to prosecute criminal charges or whether to just levy fines on financial institutions as an institution is a difficult decision, because there may not be enough criminal intent there to put an entire institution or individuals in jail. On the one hand, on the other hand, we've seen some conduct in the past year or so of some individual bankers at banks, that may rise to the level of criminal conduct. And should they be pursued criminally? Perhaps. And that might send a strong message to the whole industry.
So what do you think? Nobody's gone to jail here.
No.
Nobody has gone to jail. J.P. Morgan, $500 million fine. Credit Suisse, I think it was a few months ago, it was another $2 billion fine.
HSBC, $1.8 billion.
I mean, I can just go on and on and on and on. Nobody's going to jail here.
I know. Let me give you two examples. Again, in the Ponzi scheme world, because I follow these things, and you know, one of them ended up in a fine, and one of them is still up in the air, and I'm curious to see what happens. But in the Madoff case, J.P. Morgan ran the money for Madoff, billions of dollars, beginning in 1986, using one simple checking account, and there were all kinds of red flag activities going on. You know, round trip transactions of these dollars, no security trading going on, which was supposedly the business model. In the 14 months before the scheme collapsed, there were internal emails that expressly stated concerns that Madoff was running a Ponzi scheme. 2 months before the collapse, J.P. Morgan's warning British agencies that Madoff's returns were too good to be true, but they didn't notify any customers or anyone in the U.S. And then just a mere 2 months before the scheme collapsed, in December, so in October of 2008, they finally filed a suspicious activity report. Well, what in the world was going on leading up until that point? Why hadn't they filed a suspicious activity report? There's a real question there. And so, yes, now the various agencies and regulators are looking at J.P. Morgan, and they're talking about fines, and they're talking maybe about a deferred prosecution agreement, which means we'll fine you and we won't put you in jail.
Right.
And of course, some people are up in arms about that.
But that's the problem. That's the problem.
Exactly.
That is the problem.
If I could just chime in, I think the problem is that there's no personal accountability. Yeah. So these individuals who are running these institutions are basically have carte blanche or free rein to do whatever they want, and the institution
maybe they
pays
know
the
too
fund.
Much. Maybe they just know
no,
too much.
No,
Adam, maybe
yeah.
they know too much, know. And they can implicate, you know, the Obama or the administration. We just don't know.
Well,
let me give you another little example where it was just one banker that created billions of dollars of liability for investors, and this was in the Scott Rothstein case, and it was TD Bank. And the vice president or the branch manager of a particular branch where the money was being run, he ended up taking the Fifth Amendment. And what he had done along the way is he had promised investors that their money was safe. It was in locked accounts. There was $10 million in the account when, in fact, there was $100. He had signed letters on the bank letterhead. It allowed this fraud to perpetuate in the bank, and it was conduct that crossed the line. Well, what ended up happening? I mean, nothing yet with him. He's not imprisoned, although he is the subject of ongoing investigations, I believe. But TD Bank was assessed some pretty hefty fines. I mean, first, they've got hit with a $67 million jury verdict, and they've paid about $600 million total as a result of all of this.
I would just make the argument, though, Kathy, that money is not really prohibiting this type of behavior.
Right.
Like, if we look at the HSBC, a $2 billion fine, however, as you heard in the clip, our guest that we had on a few weeks ago, he was alluding to the fact that they're continuing this type of behavior. I mean, $2 billion doesn't get your attention. It kind of demonstrates that money is not really going to solve the problem, I would think.
Right.
Especially when HSBC made like $18 or $19 billion.
Let her answer that though. Hold on. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I do tend to agree. You know, what's interesting is to look at the reports of how banks are reporting fraud, and I saw from the FinCEN website that they reported when in 2003, kind of early on when they first started tracking this stuff, that there were about 507,000 suspicious activity reports that were filed in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 2012, that number had increased, had tripled to about 1,582,000. And so I ask myself, well, what is the reason for that? Is it because banks are getting better about reporting fraud? Is it because they're more concerned about criminal liability or the financial penalties that are being hit on them? Is it that there's more fraud? It's hard to gauge from the statistics, but we do know that there is more fraud reporting going on, but we also know that there's not still nearly enough, because we can see just in the high-profile cases that they simply failed to file these suspicious activity reports, and had they done so, the frauds may have been stopped years or decades earlier.
Kathy, we have a few minutes left. First of all, how do we get in touch with you? And also, just offer us some tips, you know, how to Ponzi-proof your investments. Just, we have a few minutes left. I know. I just wish we had like 3-hour show.
It's very, very interesting.
I really wish, and I know you're going to come back on again, but I just a few minutes and go ahead.
Absolutely. You can get a hold of me through Diamond McCarthy. My email is kphelps@diamondmccarthy.com or on my new book website, which is ponziproof.com. Some tips. Well, some of my, let me give you, since we don't have much time, sort of my top 10, I guess. I mean, you want to conduct a background check of the key players because, like, half the time they have some sort of criminal conviction or some sort of a regulatory complaint against them. Investigating the company's auditors and the financial statements, picking up the phone and calling them because sometimes auditors' names are even made up and you want to call and see whether somebody actually reviewed the books and records. You want to review and understand the financial statements and see if they comport with what your understanding of the business is. And as I said earlier, you want to understand what the business model is, and whether investor dollars are even required to run the particular business. You want to be really wary of complicated corporate structures, because when you have all these layers of LLPs and LLCs and it gets overcomplicated, that should be raising some questions.
And holding companies and offshore accounts and so on
exactly.
and so forth. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
You want to make sure that there are checks and balances in the financial structure where the same person is reporting and is holding the assets, is the custodian and the administrator, like Bernie Madoff was, there's a lot of opportunity for fraud as opposed to having checks and balances in place. You want to find out who's in charge and investigate them. You want to see whether or not there are a lot of family members that are involved in the business operations themselves. And then you really want to read publicly available information about the company. It's going to tell you a lot of good stuff, but you then really don't want to believe all of the publicly available information about the company because it might have been the perpetrator that issued a press release about how wonderful they are. So the bottom line is ask a lot of questions and insist on answers. And if you start getting delay tactics and excuses, that should be a red flag warning.
Kathy, I think this is our time is up. I want to thank you very much. I know live from Los Angeles. Thank you for...
thank you, Kathy.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. You know, I get mad when I hear all this stuff.
But I have
so
many questions, so many more questions.
I know there's a lot more that we want to ask you, but it's just too bad our time is up, okay? Thank you, Kathy. Kathy Phelps, partner.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. She wrote a book called Ponzi Proof Your Investment, An Investor's Guide to Avoiding Ponzi Schemes and Other Fraudulent Scams. That's her book. And also I want to thank my co-host, Adam Eidelman, attorney at law. Thank you. Again.
Thank you, Sam. It was a pleasure, as always.
Like always, my name is Samuel Izurza for the Money Bitch Show, Radio Shalom, CJRS 1650 AM Montreal. Happy capitalism. God bless you all.
Shalom AM. Money and business. Sam and Zerza, let's get 'em. Ha ha. Oh. It won't be long before that money hits you. You reach a certain point where that money is an issue. Tax cut inflations, learn about investments. Shoot, I know the perfect show that can help them. Shalom AM, I'll be tuning in live. Sam and Zerza got the advice for you and I. Kick your feet up, listen to the speaker. Got questions, no sweat, take that number. It's real easy, it's 514-738-4100. Get connected, hit that extension, it's 200. Money and business. That's what I'm talking about. Money, money. Money your business.